Log Talk Radio.
What's happening, everybody? What's happening? It is not that time again, not our usual time that we usually like to go on the air and do our radio show, our blog, podcast, and all of those things live. This is a Thursday evening special edition. I am the one that's called Citizen Payne. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show. Mom's on assignment in heaven doing the work that we needed to do. And this is the Kay Thompson Live Show, as I said. So it's a Thursday evening, 8 to 9 p.m. If you're listening to us now, you hear my voice, you're hearing me live. That's right. And I invited some people, as we always do, to listen in, as my brother Byron does, and letting everybody know. I just literally put a little comment on my page that you can call in, get involved in the discussion if you want, 323-679-0906, or you can just go to Kay Thompson Live at blogtalkradio.com/KayThompsonLive, and you can listen on your phone, your internet, on your phone, your laptop, your tablet, whatever. Or you can call in and listen to us live on the phone. So, the newest thing that Trump, Donnie Boy, I got to tell you, everybody, I'm a nickname giver as well, and I have been known to give people nicknames, myself included. So I would love to get up there and debate this guy, and we can throw nicknames and all kind of stuff, because I got a million of them. I don't think he wants none. I'll hurt his feelings. He'll want to leave the stage messing with E. Payne. But so the new thing. And you can't get away from the guy, right? Because he's got to get mixed up in everything. He's like the pop-up, you know, those groundhogs, or the people are trying, they keep sticking their heads up, and you try to smash the thing back down, because this dude gets involved in everything. Most recently, commenting on this trip that these representatives, Omar and Tlaib, wanted to take. And, you know, presidents don't do that. If people want to take trips, you know, they don't get involved usually, but, you know, this is a different type of dude. Also, the bigger news in that is the death of Jeffrey Epstein. I want to talk to my boys, Wayne and Byron, about that, allegedly committing suicide. But I know that the majority of you guys probably think the way I think, that it just sounds a little fishy to me. But before we get off into that, let me bring in one of our co-hosts, my brother, the historian, the actor, director. My brother, Byron Saunders. Let me bring you in, my brother. Byron, how you doing this evening?
Oh, brother, I'm blessed and highly favored. I'm actually at a Starbucks calling in New York. So, you know, I'm on the fly, as they say. I'm not down in the cesspool or the swamp like we usually call from, but I'm out here in New York actually doing a show. So it's nice to be back in the city. It's nice to be working because, you know, as an actor or a stage manager, that's what we do. That's how we make our money. So I am happy to be here, happy to be on the show, you know, and so it's Thursday, unusual for us to be on Thursday, but we're here.
That's right.
So we're going to make some, and I can't do that. I would love to see you play the dozens with the old number 45. He can't hang.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I heard he tried to trade a little bit with my man Sam Jackson. You know, Sam
right.
is not the one.
Oh, he can't hang with
a natural. Anybody who's been around Sam Jackson, he's a friend of mine,
and
you know, Sam is a natural trash talker, and he's really extremely funny. You know, it's just that in the movies he's always playing this type of character, but he's hilarious. Let's bring in our other co-host. Brother Wayne Gilman, back from assignment, back from taking care of his business. How you doing this year? Hey, how you doing, Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman?
I'm just fine, man. I clearly forgot that we had scheduled this tonight. It just dawned on me. I'm looking at the clock, you know, but I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to have you know, good old Byron back in the other swamp.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, New York is a swamp, too. You know, unfortunately, we give birth to a lot of unfortunate people. I mean, I'm not saying that all of us are like that, but, you know, I am ashamed to think that, to a certain extent, New York City is synonymous with Donald Trump or the Trump family, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, Wayne, I mean, that's a very this is something I've often thought, and we might have even talked about. I might have even mentioned a couple times on the show. You know, that's a really important point in terms of understanding who this dude is, right? He's a New Yorker.
Yes.
New Yorkers talk trash, pop off in any urban area, but certainly in New York, you're going to talk trash. You're not going to let nobody get away with nothing, you know, and it's like the movie thing, you know, you heard the gangsters in the movie, somebody comes for you, you come back at them 100 times, da-da-da, you know, that's that whole, and Trump is an absorber of culture and movies and getting lost into that stuff as much as the next person, probably even a little bit more than someone who's got all that money that he claims to have does, because he should have better things to do. But apparently he believes just as much as all of the consumers out here and people that watch this stuff. So you got to understand his psyche. You talk trash to him, he's going to continue to talk trash until you shut up and then still jump on you. You know, and so people don't understand that, you know, when he was running in the primary initially and somebody said that New York mentality, or I think it was Ted Cruz or somebody, you know, you get the whole state then, certainly all of New York City jumping on you, even parts of Jersey and Connecticut will jump on you when you start talking.
Exactly.
That stuff, because it is a mentality, a gruffness, but it, mm-hmm. There's a fast pace in the conversations and the repartee, but there are a lot of New Yorkers. Here's the caveat to that, or here's the thing that everybody needs to pay attention is, yes, you're probably going to meet a lot of New York people that are like that. But you know what the difference is? They're not all full of it, and they're not all crazy. And the whole thing about being blunt and direct to the point and usually honest is truer with the average New Yorker than it is with this man who seems to represent that, because he's not really an average New Yorker because he lived life with a silver spoon all his life, with sometimes a corrupt, rotten silver spoon in terms of the way they got it, right? So he's not really a New Yorker, but this is why a lot of the New Yorkers, certainly a lot of the people who voted for him, certainly the Sean Hannitys of the world, I don't know if he's a New Yorker, but those types identify with him. And then certainly white supremacists and racists certainly identify with him the way he's proven to be. So people don't understand that. And in the way you have to come back at a guy like that, in my estimation, you can't go toe for toe, but you got to cut him down like two or three good ones, woo-woo, shut him up like Obama did, then get to the facts and keep it moving and show your true, you know, presidential and higher moral ground. But someone like that, you got to cut them real quick, shut them up, and let them know that they better not try it again, because you got some more zingers that you don't want to hammer them with, but then keep it moving, you know? And that's where someone like Marco Rubio and some of the others really didn't know how to navigate that field. But I bet you there's some Democrats who know how to navigate that field for sure.
Yeah, well,
we
saw an example of that, not to cut you off, Eric, with Cory Booker when he was up against Biden the other day at the last debate, you know, some of the zingers he came out with, you know, that's, you know, some of the traditional barbs that you hear from New Yorkers, you know, and the thing is, you're right, there's a certain finesse with us, not all of us are like that, but those people who come from this area, New York is a melting pot, and unfortunately, we have to also give attribution to you mentioned his name a moment ago, to Hannity and his roots on Long Island and all that. You know, there are a lot of nasty people who live here in our cesspool, in our swamp, but there are also good people. You know, and there are people of means. You know, you mentioned something, and I have a true story to share here. I never forget the first time I met Robert Kennedy Jr., not the senator, but his son. I was working at Air America, and I had put in that's the defunct Progressive Talk Network that you know, is now disbanded almost 10 years now, but people like Franken and Rachel Maddow, Mark Maron, who I saw on TV the other night, used to share the mic with, and a number of others, you know, came out of that pit, that little network to hone their own skills to become the talk stars that they are today. But the deal is with Kennedy. Here's a guy whose family is from New York originally, Joseph Kennedy. They lived not far from here up in Bronxville and before they moved to Massachusetts. And, you know, I was so taken back when I met Robert Kennedy because, you know, I've followed the family as a child. I mean, I didn't know his father, but certainly was someone I respected, someone who had a lot to do with the development of Bedford-Stuyvesant and the restoration project that occurred there back in 1968 before he died. And when I went up to him, I guess he had been listening to me for a number of, at that point, years or months. I'm not sure. You know, I didn't, you know, ask him if he knew of my history. But, you know, I shook his hand. I said, you know, Mr. Kennedy, I had no idea that you were so tall. I'm 5'7". He at least looked double my size when I looked at him. And he came back, extended his hand, and he said to me, Mr. Gilman, I didn't know you were so black. And I stood there. And, I mean, it took me for a minute to recover from that, but it's that kind of back and forth,
right?
You know
that we do
it just. You know, I didn't know how to respond. I started laughing. I didn't know if we were going to take it as an insult, but you know, obviously he meant it in a positive light. I mean, his family was one of the sponsors of the network, trying to keep it alive. You know, back in the early part of this century, and unfortunately it fell apart, you know, and it's sad because, I mean, that's a whole other story by itself. I think there's a need for progressive talk in this town, but not just this town, but across the country, but, you know, it is what it is. But, my point is that it's just amazing sometimes the mentality, but these people are human too, but it is also a fabric of what our culture is here in the East Coast. And if you can't play the dozens, you know, as we used to call it as a child, you know, you can't survive. You know, you might as well hang up your cons, as they used to say, or put in your GO card and all that and go, you know?
Yeah.
Use some of the verbiage of the past.
Well, you guys know, and I know it's called it's referred to differently in the South, Byron, being Jonan or whatever. You guys know, as African Americans, as African American men, and also Wayne, if you've ever been an outsider, I know Rain being from the Caribbean, from the islands, when I moved to the suburbs from Newark, you know, whenever you're the outsider, you know, you got to develop that ability to keep people off you because they're going to try to come at you, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that the average black person is a little bit more skilled with playing the dozens than white people because it's just what we've grown up to having to develop a thick skin. It's kind of like training, you know? And when you've had to develop that because of the hate that was coming at us anyway, so we just flipped it around, just like we did with the N-word, unfortunately, and made those positive traits, you know? Which is interesting, and also the fact of the interesting thing about New York as well, and I want to get Byron your input as well on this, as well as being from D.C. But the interesting thing about New York is that people can come together, work together, be around each other all day, and then go home and be racist, right? Because it's like the Howard Beach section. You got certain sections in New York where if you go, black people have been known to get beat up or even killed. But then these are some of these same people, and I'm a little older now, so I can't really equate like I'm still part of the young generation. But I know some of these same people will be coming or might work with black people, might be friendly with the black guy at work or somebody, but then get around the mob at night, and they're using the N-word and what they really think and this and that. So what I'm saying is New York and the East Coast and this hub in this area is interesting. I'm sure it is the Philly and places like that, Providence, Rhode Island. It's interesting in that dichotomy. It's a little bit different down south, you know, where black and white working together. This might be a similar thing. But I guess the tradition, the history of it down there gives it a different flavor than it does than it has up here along those lines. And I think that's why Trump thinks he's cool with black people. That's why some black people fell for his stuff initially. Even with the Central Park Five, people didn't know about his stance on the Central Park Five. You know, Trump was, you know, people emulated him. They liked him. Of course people like being around money. Secondly, and you had rappers talking about him, wanting to be like him too, putting him in their rap songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he was a pop culture dude that, you know, because of his wealth and seemingly seemed to be cool, like some of these guys are that are closet racist, he got a pass from a lot of people, you know. So what's your take on that, Byron? I'm sorry, I went on too long.
Well, you know, playing the dozens or gentlemen, I'll start with that because basically that was kind of a defense mechanism when you were on the playground. You wanted to protect the integrity of your character, and don't bring up my mama, because if you go down there, we going to get ugly. You know, that's how it goes. So it's like, you know, this is the part that most white folks have yet to comprehend, why the term racist is indicative of so much of what's going on, because they have no concept whatsoever when they're being a racist, when they're saying racist, you know, using racist code language. I mean, it's like, you know, you call somebody a boy. Now, that's back in the 60s. That was raising up a hair on the back of any man's neck, you know?
That's right.
So you call me what? Come on. Who are you? Right now, you know, that the N-word, that's overplayed, outplayed, inplayed, got the T-shirt, gave it away, and, you know, now it's even being able to use it. You know, that used to be one of the 7 words you couldn't say on the FCC, would restrict that word. Now you can say it on television. It's not even bleeped
out.
No, wait,
no, let me back you up, because that used to be able to say that in the 70s like it was all right.
That's right.
I do a lot of watching of old, you know, reruns of 70s shows, Flip Wilson, Good Times, you know, all that stuff is on.
Yeah.
And they say that like it's all right, you know, and then the FEC shut down, but now it went back to that, right?
You couldn't say there was other words, just like me. But see, here's the real deal. I part of the problem is you get these, somebody like Michael Eric Dyson on TV, who in his repertoire will cut you, slice you, dice you, and send you back home, you know, all wrapped up with Band-Aids, as he should. You get these commentators, these Republicans on TV, who cannot defend themselves. They're like, you call them a racist, and they're like, they're all backed up because they can't figure out what it is they've done that makes them a racist. I mean, I've seen it come way too often on MSNBC, CNN. You know, these Republicans who come up with their shills for the GOP, you know, they come with their talking points. But when you take them outside the talking points, they are so messed up mentally, they have no defense for defending a racist. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like at the point at which we're calling Donald Trump a racist, right out. But then you try to get somebody on the GOP who refuses to accept that his actions, his words, his deeds, everything he's coming out of his mouth is based in a racist, white supremacy, nationalist concept. And it's really painful because – that's right, the context, because they can't figure it out. Now, for his base, the president's base, they're all rednecks. They're yahoos. The predominance of their base is in that category. Because they're the ones who are – subscribing to the ideology, the white supremacist ideology. They're the yahoos that are going crazy up in the stands when he has these rallies. And ultimately, there's no hope for them. I don't even know why the Democratic Party is trying to reach out to them. They're gone.
Right. I was just going to say,
yeah, no.
Go ahead, Byron. Go ahead.
I'm through. I mean, because I could go wrap or wax on this one for a while.
Right.
You know, ultimately,
I was I was going to say it's because they want it that way. You know what I'm saying? They seem to be clueless. No, they want to be clueless. They want it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they want it to be. They want it to be like it was when you know, black people were second-class citizens and there was a clear kind of established set of code of behavior that that's how a lot of them. I mean, I was in a location yesterday with some those type of Trump supporter types, and you know, one of the guys starts, and I'm the only black guy. One of the guys starts talking about, you know, starts talking about stop and frisk or frisk and stop and, you know, socialism and, you know, someone said turn on CNN and one dude said, oh, fake news, you know? So
as they start talking
and winding up, I'm listening and I'm hearing, you know, we're in this area, South Jersey, so this area, I expect that mentality. But it really is, you know, one they said, yeah, you know, if you have crime and stuff like that, you know, you got to have stop and frisk or whatever. I was like, you know what? I said, it's about police work. I said, cops, you know who's doing the dirt just by looking. I nuanced it. I said, the whole thing about it, if you guys don't understand anything else, that racism is inherent in our society. It's structural. It's instinctual. So it's about the person making the decisions. You can't all say that all one this type is that or that. What I should have said was, I'm for stopping, which is what I thought about after, I'm for stopping frisk too, because I want to know, make sure that all these little white boys walking around, when they look like something's on their mind, that nothing is going on. So, yeah, I'm for stopping frisk, you know, because their heads would have blown up. But the dude, but just... They're not educated, and to say the things that they say, like the dude said, I'm for a stop and frisk up in New York. I was like, he was like on some streets. I said, what street is that? He said New York. I said, New York Street. You know, and this particular one was more, you know, fit the total stereotype of listening to the echo chamber. Hearing exactly what the president, because he was just regurgitating everything that was being said. But, you know, some of them want to be that, and some of them are willing to listen, but some of them, they are ignorant of the facts. You know, when you start breaking it down, you break down the numbers, you know, there'll be ones to listen, and you'll spark their interest, and then maybe they'll go find out on their own. There'll be some who don't listen because the facts don't suit their narrative. So they're not even going to listen to the facts. They don't want to hear
the facts. The facts to them are fake news. See, that's what they equate facts with fake news. Okay, because it's so they've been buying and purchasing the lie so much that they've mortgaged their whole, you know, life.
That's their belief system. It's their belief system.
We'll
bring some stuff that's going to mess with their belief system, their core beliefs that they are the end all, be all. And if you bring something they can't fathom, people get violent. That's human nature.
Yep.
People get violent. Something so foreign and abrupt to their existence and everything that they're about, you know. But the whole thing about it, like when you're talking about, you see some of these individuals on some of these shows, and they can't handle it when you get into a real discussion of race and pop. That's because there's ignorance in racism. So they get these people who are passionate, who could talk a lot. But when you really get someone else who can talk too and really starts breaking them down, like people used to do with Sarah Sanders, where she's just not going to answer no questions no more. Because they started appealing, like, you know, that makes no sense what you're saying, right? And you people could tell when they start sounding stupid by the questions people are asking them. It's like, come on, so you don't say this, and you start getting grilled. So they don't want to ask any more questions. That's why they cut off daily press briefings. That's why Trump just says whatever. There's nobody really, and you know, there's nobody really going toe to toe to them except some of those reporters. And he cut out talking to the press at all. So, you know, there is no contrast.
I agree with you. I think the thing is that there is no contrast because these folks know that they are in trouble. There is nothing that they could do. The economy is tanking because of his policies on the economy. You know, he'll have you believe that, you know, it's sunny outside while, you know, it's raining. It's just that as long as he could keep up with promoting his agenda and having people buy into it who are not willing to read between the lines and do the research, you know, they're going to be so stunned when the reality check comes in. And I think that's slowly but surely happening. I don't wish to see another recession. I know what the last one was like. It hurt a lot of people.
But I think
that only until it hits them in the pocket, because there's an arrogance with their ignorance. That's the thing that I find so discombobulating, the fact that they can be so arrogant to maintain a certain lifestyle. Or you know, everybody out here is going through all sorts of trouble, you know, with regard to trying to keep themselves afloat, to at least feel a certain degree of pride as an American, because worldwide this man has brought us down to a level of decadence that has not been seen before in the history of this country. That's the thing that really gets to me. And the fact that he's still out there promoting his agenda, knowing full well that it's not working. You know, it's only when he is brought to his knees will that reality kick in, and I just hope that those folks who are supporting him, the ones that are sending, chanting, send her back home, the stupidity that he had gotten Netanyahu in Israel to deny a formal entry to two sitting congressmen, two formally elected Congress members, not to be part of the entourage visiting Israel, I just find it despicable. You know,
well,
what kind of is this a dictatorship or a democracy here?
Well, I see a little bit of racism from Netanyahu a little bit, please. To me, because just his whole vibe with Obama, and you know, when the Republicans invited him to come and speak to the joint session of Congress, and they acted like it was a state visit around the president. I thought that was another head of state coming to the country of a head of a state and totally disregarding that fact is despicable to me. And that, to me, suggests that he has a little bit of racism thing going on. I understand, you know, you're pro-Israel and everything for your people, but that doesn't mean that you cannot be racist as well. and obviously he's a right-wing diversion there. So if it's anything like the right-wing individuals here, then it tells me a little bit about where he's coming from, you know. But
that's his
buddy. Yeah, you know. So it doesn't surprise me is basically what I'm saying. Byron, you're going to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's the thing that I'm with respect to Israel and the right-wing government, the Zionist right-wing government. Let's be very clear, because there are a lot of Netanyahu's really apartheid concept of the Palestinians basically is the same apartheid concept that was used in South Africa. Now, he's also extended it to the Ethiopian Jews. They're catching hell. All right, so it is a racist policy. It's not a religious policy. It is one primarily based in a supremacy of color.
Mm-hmm.
Dark skin against light skin. We know what that's like in this country. And so, but the world is not calling it, except for when you see a dead Palestinian children, you know, and then all of a sudden we get all backed up again because, oh, but you can't comment on the political concept of Israel, because that makes you anti-Semite. And it's like, wait a minute, I'm not anti-Semite, I'm anti-apartheid. I'm anti-killing babies, okay?
Right.
So you're telling me now I can't be against Israel because that's what they're doing over there in their country? So, and then we do the same thing here, but I was going to say something with respect to the Democrats' political agenda. I found something amazing a couple of weeks ago. Of course, with the now that we have over half of the Democratic Congress calling for impeachment inquiry, which is a number that keeps rising. You must remember that the last 3 weeks that number has been climbing, and it's over 50% of the House Democrats. Now, here's the strategy which is starting to play out. The one thing that the Democrats were really pissed off about with the Republicans is when Comey, 2 weeks before the election, released the so-called inquiry into Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Yeah, that killed the Democrats' chances completely. Well, guess what? The Democrats are figuring, I don't have to rush to get an impeachment inquiry. You know what? It's to our advantage to have this impeachment inquiry keep all the way up, including
drag
and
out.
Through. That's right. Think about it. Do you think, I mean, if you really want to play one-upmanship, yeah, you screwed us, Republicans, but guess what? We're going to play your same card right back at you right a couple weeks before the election, and watch what happens. I'm telling you, their strategy right now is to say, you did it to us, we're getting ready to do it to you, and it's going to hurt even worse because the drip, drip, drip of all of the things that are going on now with respect to Jeffrey Epstein being suicide.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the autopsy revealed that he either hung himself or somebody broke his neck. That's the autopsy.
Yeah. That's the first thing a lot of people said.
Yes. So we see, now we're seeing how the crime scene of the syndicate that we're calling the administration is being put up against a wall, and they're falling off. They're falling off the wall because they can't stick. These people are criminals. This is a crime family. And it's ultimately being shown, including even Attorney General Barr. Do you know who he – the revelation of coming out of Washington, D.C., as it's being spoken right now, is that Attorney General Barr hired one of his family members was hired to be counsel for Epstein. This stuff, I'm trying to tell you this. Barr's got his hands filthy in this. You remember he was the one that said don't move him to Rikers Island? He forced the Justice Department to keep him in this facility. And now we're finding out that the guards had been overworked. The two that were supposed to be on guard that night did not.
I'm glad you brought that out, Byron. And again, not to cut you off, but it's important to point out that Trump tweeted over the weekend that he felt that if there is a conspiratorial element here, it's because Bill Clinton wanted this stuff buried. Like, right away,
exactly.
He couldn't, you know, like, he just couldn't give up on talking about Hillary and Bill with respect to this scenario that's going on. But, I mean, it is so telling. And who knows, you know, because you had people like El Chapo there. You had other people who have been holed up there, and far, far worse than the element that Epstein was. Not to say that he wasn't in the same league, because what was wrong regardless. But why suddenly there are weaknesses in the whole element of protection of prisoners now on that level? I could see that in Rikers Island, but I couldn't see it there in that environment, you know. So it's amazing.
So I think we are in for the next shoe to drop is, of course, they're coming back from their August vacation right after, you know, this 4 or 5 week vacation they got. But look what's the top of their agenda, gun issues. And a couple of weeks ago, we kept saying, well, where's the gun issue? Where's the gun issue? And in between those times, you got the couple more massacres. You got more white males who are engaged in target practicing on people of color. I mean, this is a serious, serious issue that's ongoing in our country. And nobody's talking about the reduction of guns. They can't even talk about the check system. How are we going to check these people?
Right.
Not to mention, we got still more guns being bought. Yeah.
Yeah, they're slowing a lot of things up. There's a lot of stuff I want to unpack what you just said, what you guys just said. First off, about Trump immediately posting about, we'll come back to the clear fishiness of Epstein being dead, because there's so many people that he rolled with, all of these cats that he rolled with, you know, and they all, I'm sure somebody, at least a couple of times, they looked at some of them girls that he was with, like, is that your niece? Is that your daughter?
Yeah.
I'm sure somebody somewhere said that and made a mistake. Oh, that's who you were. Okay. And just that's how it was. You know what I'm saying? Just like when you meet somebody who's a little bit on the edge, they're right up on that line, you're like, oh, all right. You know, and either you stay in their company, you'd be like, yo, let's get away from this dude. He's just creepy. That's the first thing to me. Secondly, is certain names that came out. This is the drawback too. Somebody want to hang around. A guy knows all the girls. He's got money, just like Trump's got money. First, everybody wants to hang around rich people. Then you got the rich guy who knows all the girls, right? And the rich guy's got all the people's money.
Right.
People gonna want to hang out with him, right? So, but certain names that were mentioned are not household names. This is how you can tell people are rolling in certain circles, right? Because Bill Richardson is not a household name. That ain't just – and the other – Sam Mitchell. Those aren't names that just some hooker's going to pull my language. No disrespect to people who are sex workers and things like that, not saying that they couldn't be aware of current events and educated and all that. But those aren't names that, unless you're familiar with a lot of stuff, you ain't just going to pull them out the air. They're not that famous.
Right.
Right?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
So that lets you know that he was rolling in a whole lot of circles, and he was a suspect dude the whole time. And either certain cats were like, I'm not messing with him, I've seen how he's rolling, or certain ones were enabling or condoning of it, or certain ones were partaking in it. Who knows? That's on that tip. On the tip where Trump immediately jumps out and says, Bill Clinton, you know what he sounds? He sounds guilty as hell. That's the first thing you said. You sounded mighty guilty. You sounded like that criminal that's trying to sell out everybody else. And if you're that dude, right, honor amongst thieves, even criminals don't like that one criminal that they can't trust. Even within their realm of stuff, they want to be able to trust. Okay, we all criminals here, and just for this job, we ain't going to steal from each other, right? Everybody shake their head. There's always that one sleazier than sleazy dude that's down to sell everybody else out. And don't nobody like that dude. He's always ends up being the one that's looked at the sleaziest one in the movie, and you want to see him get it. And you know who that is in real life here in this scenario? That's the president, Donnie himself. He's dead.
Right. Now, I got to ask you a question, guys. Listen, here's how deep it gets, because you mentioned the names that are not just regular A-list on any call girl seat. These are like the top of the list, top of the line.
Well, you got to be in the weeds.
You got to be in the weeds.
You got to know, you know some details.
Got to know something. And here's one that really defies anybody saying he wasn't the nation's rich guy's pimp. The head of Victoria's Secret, CEO, gave to Jeffrey Epstein a $70 million home on the east side of New York in Manhattan. Who gives
in power of attorney?
Who gives not just the power of attorney, but a $70 million home as a gift? As a gift, somebody please explain to me the wealth of being able to just gift somebody a $70 million estate on the east side in Manhattan, New York City. Come on.
Well, I know that's not a guilt, but I can tell you that much.
You will say that again,
Wayne? Wasn't on that list.
No, I said I know that's not one of the Gilmans, so I can tell
you something.
When you consider this, and then you consider the report that everybody said was so salacious, the report that was given from the British guy who was, talking to the one of the Trump persons at a bar, and it started to reveal all the information about what happened up in the Moscow Tower with the girls, the Russian prostitutes, golden spray. You say, oh, no, that can never happen. Yes, consider this, my people. Not only did it happen, but it happened in other places because Jeffrey Epstein did not circle himself in sidewalk hostesses straight off from Harlem. These were top of the line ladies of the working families. Okay, I'm telling you, none of this smells can pass any smell test. None of it.
No.
Okay.
Listen, you always need.
It's completely outrageous.
There's always going to be. And I noticed from the entertainment side or whatever, the dude who knows the women, that's why everybody hung out at Hef's crib forever, right? The Playboy Mansion, because the dude that is the one that knows all the women is going to be the one that everybody wants to hang with. All the cats with more money than him, all the cats that are more famous than him, everybody's going to want to be at that spot. The dude who is the plug, as the young folks say, or the hookup person who brings everybody together, that's the one everybody wants to know because they know all the fine honeys. That's something in jobs and promoting, and obviously I use Playboy because that's the obvious example that everybody that's been around since that time realize about that environment, that's how that guy rolled, right? That's who that dude was.
Yeah.
He could put you in contact with these people. Now, you said, Byron, you brought up a $70 million the mansion, right?
Mansion.
The real important thing is that he had his own island.
Yes.
See, and when they're invited to the island and
Thank
it had some
you.
Of the logs of the pilots, because what happens on your own island? Anything goes.
You're
anything
governor,
goes up in this piece.
You're the whole thing.
Ain't nobody
right.
coming to get you. Ain't no, you know what I'm saying?
Nope.
When you have a situation like that where, we can just fly to my island, it's only 2 hours outside of New York, I got a plane, wait, let's go. That's how them dudes is rolling, man. That's how you rolling at that level, if you choose to do that. And so you're going to have a lot of people hanging with him, cats that legitimately can hang with him. You know, I mean, if this dude... If he wasn't a sex trafficker or trafficking in young girls, he would still be alive today, right? He would still
Probably
be alive
so.
Today. Because
I just
nobody
like
wants to be associated with a piece of scum like that, huh?
No, I mean, this sounds more like a homicide. I mean, I am just so curious as to who. You know?
I mean,
I think 45 knows. I think Barr knows.
Of course they know.
Listen.
We all saw the night that Jack Ruby killed Leon Oswald. That was no accident. You could see the setup
coming. Yeah,
that
was no accident. But let me tell you,
right.
Byron, this with Barr, here's when you know the fix is in. When he comes out so quickly and says, Justice Department is taking over the investigation because we want to get to the bottom because it should never happen. He sure decided to make that move real quick, didn't he? He sure decided to get turned into Mr. Justice real quick. No, you're not fooling me. You're trying to get in there so you can control all the information and change everything the way you want. We're taking over the investigation. We've seen that in the movies.
Thank you. We've seen it.
How
many
movies about that? We know what you're doing. You know, how many? That's right. It's an old plot. You know?
Really? Even Ocean's 11 told us this. Come on.
Yeah.
That pack took us down that road.
You guys are hurting me, man. Both of you are hurting me because I still believe in Santa Claus. I want to believe this didn't happen. No, but you all... It just sounds more like the case. You're hurting me.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, who's too many people had too much to lose, and he probably was like, "Yo, y'all better get me out of here, or I'm telling out everybody."
Right.
You know, and Kat, they were
all nervous.
You know, everybody's Twitter thumbs, everybody's texting thumb was blowing up, and they're all having the private number phone calls like, "Yo, what'd you do over there? I didn't do nothing. Did you hang with him? You know? Yo, we got to, let's hope he better not talk, you know?
Right.
I'm telling you,
right.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
One of them that could be, I mean, we're talking about any powerful dude, white, black, Democrat, Republican.
Look at the guy who owns the New England Patriots.
Kraft
goes down, gets a good blowjob, then in a place down in Florida.
Very sloppy.
But we got it on camera, and then they make a deal so they don't have to show it on camera. And the NFL's going to only slap him on the back of the wrist as opposed to stripping him of his team. And then you got the guy down in Florida who owns the Dolphins. But he's throwing fundraisers through his Equinox, the Equinox gym system. You know, he's tampering with the LGBTQ community, and they're saying, you know what? We don't have to do this, and I'm telling you, Eric, watch what happens this year when there's kneeling at the national anthem. It's going to go after these owners who are considered themselves plantation owners, these slave owners.
I'm glad you brought that up. What about the Jay-Z factor now?
Listen, you buy your way in. You're still going to be an N at the end of the day. Yes? No?
You're still going to be a what?
I thought he was
be the N-word.
I understand what
you're
saying.
He's involved with the Russians. He owns a piece of the Brooklyn Nets. He designed
I think he
could change the narrative. I feel that. You know, he's from the hood, man. He's from Bed-Stuy.
I'd like
to think, you know, and again, this goes, plays in my face with the Santa Claus theory, but the bottom line is I'd like to think that he knows what is going on because, I mean, he announced it during the news conference. He had nothing to admit, but the deal is there's an elephant in the room. We need to address that issue. Maybe he's the person because, you know, he's got nothing to lose. This man's a multimillionaire. I don't know
they're trying to do some work there. They're trying to do some work. I think we're talking about a couple of different things. Byron is talking about the influence that these very powerful dudes have, and regardless of what they're doing, they're above the law. But that's an old movie too, ain't it? what America was founded on, people being above the law. That's what capitalism kind of is to a certain degree. I mean, it's based on a monetary system, but you're trying to get above it all. You're trying to have your stuff have influence, and why wouldn't you? Wouldn't you if you were the baddest dude on your block and you own the most property and you had the most to lose, regardless of whatever way you got all of those things you got to lose, wouldn't you make sure that you had a certain hand or a voice in things that are going to happen in that area? I mean, that's natural, right?
No, I mean, that is natural. I mean, I see what you're saying, but I also like to think that there was a certain degree of integrity, cultural altruism in terms of wanting to correct the ills, because this could snowball, man. I mean, everybody is into now seeing what's going on with respect to taking a knee. And it's been so much rhetoric to come out of 45's mouth to counter it. You know?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very hard sell this year. I tell you, because it's like the reality is this. Our athletes, just like back when Muhammad Ali took his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali, you remember the conference that they had with the athletes, Jim Brown, Bill Alcindor? You know, all of them came together to defend his choice.
Decision.
Very much as decision. And LeBron brought them back to the table again when it was the Black Lives Matter situation. And now we've got Colin Kaepernick. And now we're going to have the Miami Dolphins really take a hard look at their owner who is backing Trump openly.
And we control the show. And the thing
we control the show.
We are watching, But here's the thing, because people are always going to go see football, whatever. Particularly in markets like that where they don't have. Miami obviously has a lot of competing things that you can do, activities that people can do. You know, so it's a little bit harder, but. people are always going to support teams and franchises. So the whole political storm that was centering around Equinox, you know, you got people that were split down that were kind of split on it. You know, the guy Andy Cohen, I saw him, he was one of the first people to the famous people they attached to that story. And his vibe was like, yeah, but you can't tell people, you know, whether they can have a fundraiser for somebody or not. You know, so.
Oh, really?
Okay. So that fairness aspect, the integrity that you're talking about, Wayne, sometimes it doesn't come down on what we agree with. I kind of agree with him. You can't tell a guy that he can't hold the fundraiser, that being said. Now, and that being said, if all things were equal, all things were not equal, so the hell of with him. You can't have that. Or if I go to your spot, then all things being equal, then I'm going to choose to, you know, cancel my membership or whatever. You know, the biggest thing is the economic impact and economic power.
Well, I'm in agreement with you, man, because I feel that if you are sponsoring a fundraiser in the Hamptons and some of your most well-heeled friends are out there, because he garnered a tremendous amount of financial support that weekend, you know, then you support this man's agenda. You support racism. You support discrimination. You support what's going on the Mexican-U.S. border. All those things. And
oh, you
it
support
is
it
what
all.
It is.
And they try to, split the hairs.
Is with, yeah. But Jay-Z's involvement with the NFL may be pivotal enough to change the landscape. You know, because the deal
is going to be substantial. I don't think he would allow them to use him as just window dressing, I'm pretty sure. So, and some of these brothers are smart now, where there's going to be some more black owners.
There's
going to be a black owner in the NFL. And I think that LeBron might be one of the individuals that's potentially interested in something like that.
Mm. That would be great.
If we were to take the aggregate financial wealth of our athletes and entertainment industry, we don't really need government support. If they brought it back into the community and started flipping that dollar over so that
that's
it could
right.
stay within the black businesses, we really don't need the government. We don't need, you know, you remember the play that Ozzie Davis wrote, Day of Absence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, have a day when black folks just stop being white folks' everything.
Yep, yep.
Think about it. They fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
They can't handle the stress, the strain, the pressure. Okay?
Cool.
As much as 45 is screaming the immigration laws, how many illegal immigrants has he hired and is still under his employ? They need to break this thing down. Okay,
no,
you go and make you go raid a Coke industry, Coke Brothers industry, and you're raiding the undocumented workers. Well, excuse me, but I don't believe none of their names are on the check signing where the money is coming from. So why are you busting their butts? You know.
Yeah, and I'm so glad they were exposed because their behinds need to be locked up.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, they said potentially it's because, you know, they're talking about, well, you know, the notion was you're supposed to hold the businesses accountable. And they were saying the businesses were selling the people out so they could get amnesty for their business. That's one aspect. I even think that as those people, right, I definitely think that they would do that, eh? But maybe if those people have been there for a minute, right, some might have been there 15 years or whatever, maybe they got a little salary bump that they're able to negotiate. Don't you think that it's not outside the realm of possibility that the owners of those companies would be down with this raid so they could drop that price level, that salary level back down to what it was before they negotiated?
Hey, listen,
I can see them that being one of the reasons them doing that as well.
I can tell you that that's exactly what they're doing because in a state like the state of Georgia and most of your southern states that are right-to-work states, who do you think is picking the Coca-Cola orange juice, the Minute Maid? Who are those folks picking the oranges and the pecans? You know, these are migrant workers.
these
yeah.
are not.
Americans don't do that work no more, folks. Americans
no more.
They don't want beneath them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's,
so, I mean,
that's
ultimately,
beneath us.
You got mm-hmm. your power, Fortune 500 companies investing in cheap labor. That's the capitalist
yeah, right.
system. That's the flaw of the system. It cannot operate with a livable wage income because it cuts into their profits, and it's all profit-driven based on cheap labor. That's what slavery
That's why they're making Nike
that's,
cigarette, Nike,
right.
Nike sneakers for, you know, paying
right.
people cents a day to work on those things. I mean, you know, and, and that's what I've said. We've got five more minutes left. That's what I've always said, that if getting back to the black economic development of power and business,
yeah.
I've always
yeah.
said that you take the three biggest athletes in the world, like, for example, basketball at the time, when I first came up with this idea, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal. They say, we're gonna have our own sneaker company. We don't want to deal with all you guys. We're going to develop our own
right.
brand. We're gonna put the factories in the community. We're going to create work for people. We're going to sell them at a certain price. And to sell them, all three of us are going to wear our sneakers all the time. Don't you know how much, what kind of an impact that would have made if those brothers decided
Absolutely.
To do that? The sneaker
and why
company,
right. that we haven't done it?
You know, well, you know why. That's
it's human.
Right. Come on,
that's
Wayne.
Where that aspect of human nature comes in. Because besides being black, we're humans, and human nature comes in where that greed comes out. And somebody doesn't want to do it for the people. They want to do it for themselves. You know?
Exactly. And that's
and
our
so,
problem.
You know,
I mean, it's unfortunate.
That is our problem. You know?
Yeah. And this is where the white man,
problem.
I hate to say it, I hate to go
uh-huh.
there.
We can't.
You know,
don't hate to go there. Just tell the truth, Wayne, because it's all right. The truth is going to set
us
free.
We've been trying to play catch up. So you know, every time you catch up a little bit, and then you lose the progress because you get individuals who went for themselves at a certain time. So some of the progress is lost, but we're still playing at a deficit. So we can't afford to lose no progress. I always tell about somebody, and there was a great animation online when people talk about racism and why black people haven't caught up. And they illustrated it, used an example of a race with hurdles. And
yes,
they said,
I've seen that.
You've seen that. And they said the white runner started off like 5 minutes ahead of the black runner, first off. Then the black runner had to run hop on 1 foot, right?
Right.
Then he had to hop on 1 foot with one arm tied to you. Right? And they're still running at a constant pace, right? They're still running at a constant pace. Then he got his feet untied, but then he had to jump over hurdles. So you never catch up until the situation is reset. Until it's reset.
Yeah, but
that's
what the problem is, though, Eric? What the problem is with that is that by the time they put all those restrictions and bumps in the road, guess what? We're still setting the world records of getting over the finish line.
Exactly, because we developed the mentality of doing it and being twice as better. We got two minutes before we go, about 15 seconds or whatever. Byron, tell us about the show that you're doing.
Well, yes,
that you're in New York
this
for.
Is a this is a show that I did one today, which was the Eve of Beltane. This is a for the Broadway Bound Theater Festival, an Irish musical, a love story. Very good.
Mm.
Excellent writing. Joe Eisen, Connie Kupfinger, directed by Colleen Heffernan, and music by Henry Aronson. All Broadway talent. Producers come to see it. And so I'm in a piece next Thursday, 8 o'clock, at the Theater Row in a piece. One of three pieces. I get my 10 minutes of glory on stage, guys. So I'll send you the
all
information
right.
in detail.
Gotta go.
All right. So, and then otherwise, peace and love always, y'all.
All right, Brother Byron Saunders. We're going to go see that show next week. Take care, brother. Okay, Brother Wayne Gilman, give the peoples your send-off, sir.
I just want to say keep hope alive, and I hope one day we can be televised.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And so you can see the expressions on our face and know we mean business. All right.
Thank you.
Legendary newsman Wayne Gilman. See you next week. This has been the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m., we try to keep it live. But, you know, we're also archived, so you can listen to us anytime you want, and you can listen to us as many times you want, and you can binge listening to us. Isn't that something great, as you can binge listen to the Kay Thompson Live Show? All right, my name is Citizen Payne. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show. We'll see you again next week. BlogTalkRadio.com/KayThompsonLive is the way to check us out. See you next week. Gotta go. Love you, Ma. Love you, Ma.